At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In the center of the universe, on the planet Eternia, looms Castle Grayskull, ancient fortress of mystery. Its power sought by the dark forces of Snake Mountain, sanctuary of sin and sorrow, ruled by the demon Skeletor and his evil acolytes. And the only thing that stands in their way is Prince Adam, who defends the secrets of Castle Grayskull as He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. Keeping our promises for the first time ever on this show, we are doing Masters of the Universe Revelation Episode 2 to alternate with the other G.I. Joe Extreme episodes that we're watching. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
Speaking of promises, I'm Robert Clark Chan.
What?
Oh, shit.
What is happening?
That's right. I promised that we would do a Crocodile Dundee off on the podcast.
Well, you lose. I haven't heard anyone else's yet, but you lose.
Let's hear it. Let's bring it.
That's not an impression. This is an impression.
Oh, that's terrible.
That was the Beatles.
That was Liverpool. That's on me.
That was Wacko Warner as a Beatles impression. That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Nope.
Oh, perfect. I hate to say it, but I perfect. Think Ray might
have won.
Oh,
how I might have won that. But I might have won.
But it's because he also chose the easiest thing because he said the actual line.
Right. But I have been listening. I've been watching Bluey pretty much nonstop for 6 months.
Chan, I also have been watching Bluey pretty much nonstop for at least 6 months. So,
and I've been giving blowies nonstop for at least 6 months.
I don't understand how you keep getting all these horrible DMs from boys. What could possibly have caused that?
Look, can I just say, God. Can I just say that this episode is titled Part 1, and it's Episode 2, Part 1, and I don't like it.
Everything about this is upsetting. Oh my goodness.
I don't like there's only like 8 episodes in this season. You're going to title one of the episodes Part 1?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Because the first one was the pilot. We all know that.
Then the pilot that didn't have a plot. I enjoyed this episode. I could see how if you watched those two episodes back to back, you would think that maybe the pilot had an actual plot and was written like an episode of TV.
Uh-huh.
I have a feeling that once I get to the end of the show, I'm going to look back, forget all the failings of the pilot, and be like, yeah, that's a solid show. I'm pretty sure that's going to be the case. Even if I watch one a week, I'm pretty sure. Because even with this episode, I was like, this is a good episode. Maybe I misjudged the pilot. And I forgot all of the bad stuff about the pilot. But again, if you need to watch all of it for the pilot to be good, that's not a good pilot.
I mean, fair enough. We've already retread all of that ground many times over on our episode. And you can go back yourself and listen to Masters of the Universe Revelation Episode 1, the pilot episode, to hear many, many thoughts of TV's Gina Ippolito where it comes to the writing of that. But we're talking about Poison Chalice.
With an Australian accent.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I'd argue no. You couldn't.
This episode was called The Poisoned Chalice.
This episode of Bluey is called The Poisoned Chalice.
Can you say Poison Chalice? I don't know what Bluey is. I've never heard of it. I assume they do it like Dora the Explorer. They say words and then say, can you say that word?
Gina, you got to get in on that business.
Gina, you got to check some Bluey. It's on Disney Plus. I know you have it. We've talked about that in the hour and a half before we started recording today.
Is it that blue dog?
Yes.
Yes.
It's a wonderful S-tier kid show.
I like dogs. I will say I've been rewatching The Walking Dead, and there is a lot of animal death.
Mm. Bluey is basically Walking Dead, just with the aforementioned.
So, Gina, I was going to say, if you don't like animal death, you maybe should avoid Bluey.
Oh, God, it's gruesome.
God, it's everywhere.
Yeah, so the six-year-old is a dog assassin, and she goes around slitting dogs' throats.
No, I hate this. I hate even joking about this. Can I say, though, that there is an animal man in the first minute or so of this He-Man episode, and I actually wrote yay out in my notes with a lot of exclamation points.
Well, let's dive right in here, because the episode opens with two masked people. We don't know who they are. They look like Tusken Sand Raiders, sort of, from the Star Wars movie. And
I was thinking they actually look like when Princess Leia is pretending to be a bounty hunter and she says, you have hibernation sickness.
Same deal. It's the same deal. I'm into it. Well, they go to a place on a mission, it appears, and they find a giant sack of garbage bags, which I thought was a little bit weird in this post-apocalyptic future, that there is a garbage dump with Glad bags all over the place. But there, they're like, this smells stinkier than usual. And He-Man, very underrated character, Stinkor, pops out.
Yeah. I was very excited to see Stinkor, who like sort of has the face of a skunk. And if you had the Stinkor toy, actually stunk.
Yes, he did.
My brother, recently sort of took all of my parents saved all of our toys. So
love it.
My brother went up to the attic recently to get all of them. And I asked him to smell Stinkor to see if he still stunk. And he said he does. He still stinks. Great. Which is amazing, like that the 80s toy has lasted that long. I will say, as soon as I saw Stinkor, I was disappointed in myself for not putting together the pieces sooner, because they're really harping on how much this trash heap stinks. There's even a line that says like, oh, I know it's trash, but it really stinks. And I mean, when I watch shows, I try not to get ahead of it, because then I'm annoyed at myself when I know what's going on. But I was really shocked that I didn't immediately say Stinkor's in that pile.
Yep.
I was pleasantly surprised.
I was really annoyed that I was trying to figure out, like, what does that mean? And I didn't pick up that it would be Jason Mewes under that pile.
It is. That is Jason Mewes, a.k.a. Jay of Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't even look.
Oh, no, I meant before he spoke. I should have known that.
he looks like it. Yeah. I mean, I think they physically modeled it after him, I believe. I could be wrong about that. Oh, Lord, he's muscular.
That's the part he was born to play.
It really was.
Here's the deal. I wish I'd played Stinkor. I'll put it out there. Like, it's a great bit. It's really, really fun. I love that they had. That's one of the things I really do like about the new series, is that they've taken these C-level He-Man toys, that many of which maybe didn't even show up in the original cartoon, and they're just dropping them all in right and left.
You calling Stinkor C-level?
Yes, I am. Thank you. He's right there with the one. Who's the one with the mist one, where you could put water in his chest and then push his head down and he would spray mist at your friends?
Mr. Mistor.
I know you're doing a bit, but that might be right. So that's the crazy thing. It might actually be Mistor. That could be correct.
Mistor, like...
MR dot Mistor.
So take these broken wings.
Thank you.
And learn to spray again. Learn to spray so clean.
Thank you.
Mr. Mistor.
That's what we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
I can't promote a bit.
Songs, and that's, yeah. I don't know.
So there's a big old fight that happens, and Stinkor can go a little bit. Like, he was getting some good stuff going on. It turns out the two people underneath the robes are Teela, who's now, like, shaved the side of her head and is looking totally badass. Very kind of muscular. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And her friend Andra.
She was muscular
Andra,
before, but yeah, and then her lesbian lover.
Mm-hmm. Seemingly, at least very good friend. Very good live-in friend. Andra, who I don't remember from the first episode, but she's there now.
Yeah, I don't think she was
on the travels. I don't think she was. Yeah, so she's
been
picked up in the interim.
The implication is that it's been some time.
Yes.
Some time has passed, and in that time, Teela is now traveling with her lesbian sidekick, much like Xena.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's fair. Absolutely. Also, yeah, I got some cool Last of Us 2 vibes. Just from the fact that she is really kind of buff.
I haven't played it yet, Ray. Don't spoil it.
Oh my God, Gina, you've only had literally all year during a pandemic. I don't know what to tell you. There is a character in there who is a lady, and she is super buff, and a lot of gentlemen on the internet had weird problems with that character. Weird.
Oh, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that men who play video games are insecure about their manhood.
Let me just say, Gina, play that shit.
I'm still on the first one.
The story's incredible. Well, play that shit.
I know. I don't know why it sounds so tiring. I used to do it for days on end in college.
I know. Now, look at it. Here's the deal. As an older gamer now, I could play back in the day for like 14, 15 straight hours and not bat an eye. I get about 2 hours of gameplay in these days, and I'm just like, whoo, where's my Depends?
I mean, you could have just gone to the bathroom.
I mean,
pause, go up, and go to the bathroom.
I'm just too busy searching my cabinet for the Werther's originals that I just don't have the energy to play anymore. It's crazy how the time catches up to you. And the old axiom is true that when you're younger, you have all the time and all the energy, but none of the money. And then in your middle times, you have all of the energy and all of the money, but none of the time. And now older, you have all of the time, you have all of the money, but none of the energy. And that's sort of where we're at. Like, you're right, Gina, I can't play, but for fuck's sake, play Last of Us and Last of Us 2. These are great stories you will want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean I have no excuse other than
hubris.
At the end of a long day of doing other things, it seems much easier just to watch 5 hours of TV.
Yeah, thank you. At the end of the day, look, you could play like an hour of Last of Us or watch an entire season of Arrow in between your MCU watch. It's hard to make these calls. God damn it. So they end up finding the thing and they rout Stinkor. And it's the Glove of Globula, which is just a complete MacGuffin. Who cares?
Yeah.
They take it back to Magestra, who, you know, is anybody fooled by this disguise at any point? Were you guys fooled by any of this?
No. And I mean, I'm glad that... especially because like they have the same voice actor voice.
It's Nina Headley, yeah, and she isn't trying to mask anything through her performance.
But I think first of all, it's Hedy, not Headley.
Oh, excuse me, thank you.
It's Headley.
Headley.
But yeah, there you go. But I was glad that, like, I admit I was a little bit annoyed at the fact that, you know, Teela is like going along with this and never was just like, hey, you know, Evelyn. But then she does. And it's clear that she's sort of known this entire time. So I was like, all right, I'll give him a pass because it was too obvious. Like, she can disguise her face, but not her voice. Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, exactly. It was a little weird. Hire another actress, you weirdos.
Yeah, but then they fixed it because, you know, later on, Teela is like, all right, fuck you, Evelyn. Yeah, like, we know it's you. We've known it's you. And then, like, you know, I feel like they did a clever sort of plot point here, which, no, you know, I'll get to it when we get there later on. I don't want to spoil anything.
No, that's fair. Well, one of the things I really enjoyed about this dialogue between Teela and Magistra is they have a really fun tech versus magic back and forth that happens where Tila's like, I have now forgone magic because look at where it got us. Really, tech in science is where it's at. And then, of course, Evil Lyn, a.k.a. Magistra, is just like, yes, but magic gets us so much further. And I really, when it comes to, like, you know, constant, like, convos, tech versus magic, especially from all the Who Would Win I've done, is such a wonderful dichotomy to break down and have fun with. I'm on board for this conversation in this episode of television.
Yeah, I always enjoy a good, like, science versus magic type of thing. Mm-hmm. I will say, like, I had a weird feeling about this because usually magic is a stand-in for religion and mm-hmm. tech is a stand-in for science. And as someone who does not like religion and is not a fan of any organized religion, the message of this episode seems to be like, yeah, yay magic, science is evil and tech is evil. And I was like, ooh, I don't like this message. I mean, I'm hoping that there's some sort of marrying of the two that happens later on.
I mean, they hammer it so hard. It's clear that Teela is going to be wrong by the time we get to the end of the series.
I
should have.
But Masters of the Universe as an original idea was a blending of tech and magic together, you know, in a Reese's peanut butter cup, if you will.
They go on this mission. And it's run by like evil sciencey guys that believe in tech and think that like, oh, tech is going to save them. And I was like, oh, I don't like the fact that the magic people are good and the science people are evil.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, some of the magic people are evil and Skeletor, though. So it's not necessarily.
Yeah,
you know that, but I it's one of the fun back and forths you can have, and I agree with you, Gina, 1,000% about like one is religion, the other is science based, and there's, you know, a whole thing to be had there. I find those types of debates and stories, those kind of worlds, extra fun. They do it a lot in the Final Fantasy games, and I just think it's neat.
Yeah, I do as well. And I also do like the fact that as the magic is draining away from this world, yes, of course they turn to science. I hope at some point down the line it becomes clear that not all the science people are evil.
Well, Teela's a science person and she's not evil.
Yeah, but she's like a converted science person who like up until a few months ago was like a magic person, but because like she got lied to, and also it's clear that this is going to be about sort of getting her back on track and all of this stuff. So I just hope that down the line it's sort of like, look, neither magic nor science is truly evil, and our planet will function its best when we're using both of these.
Well, you don't even know Teela. Episode 3 of this is actually called Teela Got Her Groove Back. So. crazy
groove technology or
yeah I wonder in Ray's mind what the plot of that movie was.
It's deep Dickin, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. So her groove was like vibrators versus dicks.
Her groove was her vagina.
Science versus magic, everybody.
I think it's do I take a man dick or do I take a vibrator dick that I bought on Amazon?
Isn't that the eternal question?
I mean, if we're in a tech universe, then obviously Amazon would have to exist on Eternia. While we're
free delivery still somehow.
Things that are good versus evil, I do want to bring up this.
And broken.
No glove, no love.
I enjoyed it.
I am going to take this time to mention that I fucking hated this.
Oh no.
And
wow.
At the time they brought in some garbage like contemporary reference. There's this sort of discussion all the time, like in Disney movies. I have a friend who loves Moana, hates with a fiery passion, and still brings it up. The tweeting joke. It's like when you write with a bird, that's called tweeting. And it's, you know, it's the sort of thing where like you do it once and you kind of let it slide. In Raya, there's a lot more of that.
There's a lot of it in Raya. Yeah.
Yeah, it's off-putting, I think. And in Masters of the Universe Revelation, it's all contemporary references. It's just nonstop. Hey, we're in 2021, but this is a magical universe. And it's right. One of many reasons it was garbage.
Wow, Chan with the shots fired.
I will say it's very on brand for Kevin Smith. You know, he's sort of known for references. I'm usually not a fan. I actually hate that, you know, ever since Disney like went digital and went Pixar-y, like I haven't really been a fan of those movies as much as the original Disney movies. And that's sort of one of the reasons. Because like if you look at something like Shrek, it's nonstop references.
You know, Shrek is not Disney though, right?
Yeah, but it was around that time when all DreamWorks and all the animated movies sort of, with the exception of like Miyazaki movies, obviously.
Well, the greatest ones, yeah.
But they all really they all sort
that
of
that run of Austin Powers jokes in My Neighbor Totoro. Though I will say that was one of the weakest Miyazaki.
You're not wrong. Look, all of the Facebook and emoji gags in Spirited Away were really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I didn't mind it here. I thought at least they're sort of relegating it to one character if she's going to be sort of the sassy lesbian friend that.
Oh, they did not. And I have I have proof.
Chan's got some. He's got some receipts. It sounds like.
Okay. All right.
Well, pushing this forward. So Majestra says, "Hey, this is great. We did a mission. Would you like to do another mission? And we're going to pay you more." They're like, "All right." They go, "We got to go to Snake Mountain." Yes. Like,
you don't throw money on the ground if you're trying to hire somebody. My God, you like walk into a Pizza Hut and be like, "I'll pay you triple for that pepperoni," and then just throw $30 on the ground. What the
fuck?
That's
the only way I pay for things, Chan.
And that's why you're banned from so many restaurants.
Can I tell you, when I was a retail manager of a game store, one of my clients was one of the young students on the TV show AP Bio. Like, he actually like went on to like be on television. And he was kind of a fun kid. He was a little goofy and silly. Well, at one point, he went to go pay me for something, and he pulled out the cash to do it to get the stuff. And he made it rain all over the counter with the bills. And I just took a step back from the counter and I said, "What's going to happen next is you're going to pick all this up and hand it to me like a goddamn adult."
Yeah, I would set someone on fire for doing that. I joke, but I would hate it so much. Although I do admit that if we were in a land where you just carry around coin purses, I mean, it's got to be real tempting to throw that coin purse down on the ground and you know, hear him clink.
Yeah, no, I would do it.
I'm sorry. You do not make someone crouch down to pick, even especially if you're just hiring them. For God's sakes, have some decorum. Like, if someone did that to me, I'm like, "No, I will not take your stupid job. Go away."
Dang. So you're telling me I shouldn't have had to get my first video game paycheck out of a wishing well?
I mean,
I'm wishing on a wishing well, kiss and tell.
If I know one thing about the video game industry, one, it's that Terrence Trent D'Arby is always there singing because he doesn't, you know, like they can afford Terrence Trent D'Arby to just be not there wrong. In the break room. And then two, there is no amount of humiliation that they won't subject their employees to just for laughs.
Boy, Chan, have you worked in video games? That's on the nose on both points. Who knew?
Here's the thing. We're routinely talking an hour and a half before these podcasts start.
That's correct.
And it's usually us complaining about work. So I have plenty of stories about the horrible things. What horrible people Gina has worked with, and I'll say names. I know that she can't say it on the air, but I'll say what horrible people are and who she hopes never to work with again.
Probably everybody.
Let's go with star meter power from the top. George Clooney is a asshole.
No, I look forward to Chan, you know, when he gets a moment free. Is the holiday receipts episode where he just goes back to all our old conversations and does a supercut of us just tearing ourselves apart.
Yeah, I have to say that you know, we all have to stay friends with Jan because he could easily destroy us. Like, what's the, like White Jeopardy guy has got nothing on our old podcast episodes.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
anyone would hire any of us.
I've been trying to stay offline. No.
The
recently,
stuff that
so
makes
I don't
it
really
on
know
air,
what he said, to be honest.
It was terrible. What makes it on air for us, though, we can at least defend as comedy. We're not punching down. It's usually punching at ourselves.
Yeah, it's always punching at Ray.
Here's the deal. Well, that is punching. Wait a minute. I got to rethink that now.
Well, I mean, if it goes by IQ, it's definitely punching down. If it goes,
I'm in
it goes
trouble
by
there.
Status in the world as a white man, then it's not.
When both of you die, I will be at your funerals playing classic clips from unaired episodes.
Until people just file out, just being like, I knew this person was a disappointment.
Look, I just had my annual physical today. And okay. I just want to say, I have a feeling that A, I'm the only one on this podcast that goes to an annual physical.
Yeah, every year?
What is that, Daniel?
Women have longer lifespans than men, except when men get married, their lifespan goes up because they're putting that emotional labor onto their spouses to take care of them when they can't take care of themselves.
Well,
and conversely, women's lifespans go down because then they're worried about the men. I mean, one of many reasons, but their women's lifespans go down when they get married.
And sucking life out of my partner. That is correct.
The people who have the longest lifespan are actually single childless women, longest lifespan, and report the most life satisfaction / happiness. I bring that up for no reason, but what I'm saying is I'm going to outlive you both, except that now that I've said that out loud, I've cursed myself and will die within a week.
Gina, don't stand in the street, Gina.
One thing you don't know about Asian people is that we have reasonably long lives, but when they're fueled by spite, we will live forever.
You're only half.
Half of forever is still forever.
Good point, Chad.
Also, I'm putting it out there now that if in the next week I die of some freak accident or something, some sort of like undiagnosed heart thing or whatever, you fully have my permission to play this section to be like, ha, listen to this dummy. Don't let anyone tell you any differently. Don't let anyone tell you you're monsters. If I die within the next week, I want you to play this section and be like, holy crap, isn't that spooky? Because as you all know, my favorite month is October. My favorite holiday is Halloween. So I would love to die in a spooky way and then have it be on.
I'm going to edit this chunk to whatever length is required so that when you die, it will sound like, if I die on September 23rd, 2043, I want you to play this at my funeral.
God. I really want you to do, I want you to hold on to this now until when I actually die, which I'm going to assume is like going to be like 94 years old or something. And I want you to actually play it then, because that will be the ultimate bit.
It's fair.
Hold on to this for that many years.
Hey, Gina,
and like you get up to say a word at my funeral and you just like hit your, I'm assuming it'll be like a brain implant by that point beams everything into other people's brains. Yep. That says like this piece of old tech that used to exist on what was once the internet of Gina saying that she was gonna die. And then, because by then we will have conquered death, I will look at you from my plasma screen, which is what they uploaded me to, some sort of plasma from the great beyond. And I will say,
plasma screen with like smart TV function.
I like it. Yep. And she's still not playing goddamn Last of Us.
Nope. She's got the inputs and everything, and the Xbox is just sitting right there.
No. Look, I have a long to-do list in the afterlife, okay?
Gina, just for nothing at all, could you do me a favor and just recite the names of all the months and count up to 31 for me really quick? just no reason. I just think it'd be kind of funny. It'd be a funny bit. I
mean, no, I'll get it from chopped up phonemes. Don't worry about it.
Kind of better that way, honestly.
Yeah, I'm sure with all the podcasts that we've recorded, I will at some point have said every single month.
Yeah, no, it's like Major Bear Roddenberry. They have her voice so that she can continue being the computer long after she's gone, because she said so much on tape already.
Not perfect. back to the show.
No, not really.
They get this idea to steal this cup from Snake Mountain, which takes us to a flashback. And here's He-Man. He-Man and Teela fighting Whiplash outside the front door of Snake Mountain.
Whiplash got a kick out of that.
Boom! Nailed it. That's not current, though. That's just a normal pun that could exist in this world, Chan.
Okay, I did mark both shitty puns and contemporary references.
Not the same thing.
Here's the thing for me. It comes down to tone. The thing that makes He-Man work is that it's kind of goofy and weird, and they kind of lean into the weirdness. Here, they sort of go like, that's weird, huh? But, you know, we're like adults now, so we get that that's weird. So let's just kind of have a funny joke about it. Zoo morning crew. and if they had just leaned into it and been like, man, this shit is crazy, right? But instead they try and split the difference and be both snarky about it and also try and play it deadly serious, like, but this is no game. And
I might not be clawful, but I am awful.
Yeah,
great Hall of Fame line.
I will say that tonally it seems like the show has not settled on a tone yet. Like Chan just said, is it the fate of the world rests in your hands, or is it tongue in cheek? And it's interesting because in paying attention to the credits, I noticed that there are several executive producers listed. Mm-hmm. But there are no staff writers, story editors, executive story editors. Like basically there's no writers listed. It seems like this was written without a mid or lower level writer's room, which is a very strange way to do a show, and pisses me off also because the more shows that try to get away with like not hiring writers, the more fucked writers are, basically. Uh-huh. So I would be curious to see, like, is this, like, it did say written by and someone's name, and then you know, it had Kevin Smith listed as I forget what is writer.
As just the Kevin Smith on the show.
Yeah, he had like a writer title. But I would be curious about, and I'm sure there's some sort of article out there, but I'm curious what this writer's room was, because yeah, I do think that tonally it has some problems, and yeah, I'm curious why that is. Usually it's because there's the writer's room isn't solid, or it's just, you know, it's sort of piecemeal, and I think that this might have been done piecemeal by a piecemeal writer's room. I'm very curious about the making of this show, basically.
Well, get your friend Kevin Smith on here and we can grill him for episode 5.
Yeah, he'll be thrilled.
Yeah, awesome.
Point of fact, the writer, credited writer, is Dayam Mishra. She has two writing credits, including a bunch of writer's PA credits for earlier stuff, but it's Masters of the Universe Revelation is her first. She's got two episodes this season. Next, Magic the Gathering, the TV series.
Oh, let's get it, everybody.
I do not know how to feel about that at all, because I loves me some Magic the Gathering.
Who doesn't?
I do not know how live action anything's going to go with that IP.
I mean, it's going to be great, obviously. It can't go wrong. 10 out of 10 out the gate.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, it's very possible that she was a writer's assistant on this show and they gave her an episode to write.
Two of the first five, apparently. Not bad. I mean, I don't know why y'all here trying to take down lady writers, first off. Let me just say that. Obviously, they work harder. She's obviously paid her dues to get into this room. She finally gets her big shot. And then I got Chan being all, it's just tonally not what I'm looking for. All I hear is gatekeeping, Chan. I think let the female females thrive.
Let the female. What? You just stumbled right into your Ferengi speak, didn't you?
No, here's the deal. I started feeling it going that way and I committed. I hope you're happy.
Okay, well, that you did more than the show did. Moving on.
Oh, no.
Damn.
Here's my list of the top 15 MCU characters that I don't think are written very well. It's only coincidence that 14 of them are women. Look, I'm just saying, Chan, eyes on you right now.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Open the jawbreak.
The powers of evil control Castle Grayskull.
Oh, yeah, Dad, what? Ram-Man power. I'll get us inside, He-Man.
Ram-Man, He-Man, and Castle Grayskull, each sold separately. You have to put the castle together.
Ram-Man, use your head.
I just did.
Not that way.
We have a prisoner.
Good. Who's the prisoner?
You are, because we have the power.
Oh, no. Ram-Man and He-Man from the Masters of the Universe collection, each sold separately. Castle Grayskull also sold separately from Mattel.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
So, yeah, so like just looking at it, looking at series writing credits, there are only five people listed and one is Kevin Smith. And a four-person writer's room is a very small writer's room. So I'm curious how this was written and how, and, you know, I'm just curious about it.
You don't believe that it's very possible this wrote itself.
I feel like there's a lot of executives in Hollywood who think that that's how it works.
Yeah, that's probably
there it is.
True.
See? Easy. Look, this is why I should be an executive, obviously. Let's give me some money, everybody. Let's do this. Okay, so they get to Snake Mountain and they find this wolf door, which is what we remember from the flashback when they were whooping up on Whiplash. There's a brand new, very technologically advanced gate on it, not going to get through at all. So they open up the pit from before and they dig under to get in the compound. Pretty cool. We then get into the compound. We see a bunch of people with robes on, kind of cult-like robes. And one of them turns, oh shit, it's a cyborg. Dude's got like half a metal face, like the Terminator, sort of. And that's real, real cool. They advance on into the main room where the cup is, okay? And we meet previous characters, Triclops, Trapjaw, and then later Whiplash again, and all of them are kind of merged, you know, man-machine kind of a deal, which is what we see Triclops doing to this poor guy and his kid drink from this cup from the motherboard, which is sort of their god, which is this giant computer. And the computer thing puts this robot-looking shit into the cup. The guy drinks it, and Chan, do you like body horror? Because we get some goddamn body horror.
Look, I tell you what I love is Henry Rollins, who voiced Triclops.
Oh.
I did not realize that. Okay.
He did a good job.
He did do a good job.
Here's what I don't love.
Glory be unto we who live and diode in.
It's a good bit. It's a goddamn good bit, Jay. You're going to get on board with these by the end.
Will I? Will I?
You know what I liked is they're burning off like OG He-Man characters left and right.
Yes,
because you know, which is like obviously in the original, you know, with cartoons, like no one's really dying. But
ever.
In this one, it's like not only are they dying, they're like physically deformed and they're changing. Like these are some big OG He-Man characters that they're just like, yeah, what if we just like fucking deformed them and made them half machines. And cool. You know, this scene has a pretty cool moment where basically this guy who seems like he's like a farmer or something, and his little helpless daughter are saying like, oh, we need to learn to adjust to the new ways that things are going. I'm sure there's some deeper meaning, deeper message about like automation versus the worker and things like that.
Oh, okay.
But so he drinks these, you know, like little basically computer things that go inside
robot
your body.
Robot juice.
Juice. That's what I said.
Okay, nanobots.
Clarifying.
As Hagopian would suggest.
Yes, we would.
Is nanobots of terrible writing.
These aren't nanobots, though. This is the essence of a computer stream.
It's actually animated pretty cool.
It is cool.
The juice is animated. The juice is loose.
Clearly, juice.
The juice of compute.
But yeah, so he sort of drinks it and immediately also starts to mutate, and one of his eyes pops out, but it's
that shit was scary.
Still a chat. It was pretty cool. And you know, but the coolest part is, so then Tila basically, she says, okay, I'll distract him while you grab the cup to her friend whose name I can't remember. And
Andra.
Yeah, so she starts doing it. So she starts distracting them, and Ed is just like, "Hey, boys, it's me, Henry Rollins." And the whole time, this sort of little girl is standing there sadly, and you know, Tila goes to rescue her, and then she rotates her head, you know, 180 degrees to look
at
her.
That shit was terrifying.
Even though they didn't show it, she clearly has drank this juice as well.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool because I, you know, the sort of helpless little child or helpless little girl is a trope that I'm pretty tired of.
Yeah.
You know, anytime it's like, oh, I need to save this useless kid.
She's fighting people for a while. She tries to, excuse me, she tries to save the little girl, who then spins her head around exorcist style, turns her body, and her arms open up into cannons, and she fucking starts blasting people.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, shit.
I like the bit. It's a good reveal. I don't like that they started the scene shoving around the guy to sort of put you off the scent that they've already been here, mm-hmm. or that indeed they are joining willingly. They make it seem like he's a prisoner and now we're going to do terrible things to you. I think they could have done a much better job of finessing that so that we don't necessarily see, but still assume that they are being forced.
Oh, okay. To me it was sort of evident that he is desperate and therefore is doing this because he's desperate as opposed to being forced.
Well, I read it how Gina did.
He says that, but I when you first see them, Trapjaw's like shoving him and like, get over here, and throwing him on the ground.
Well, Chan, you've obviously never been in a cult before, okay? So first off, you know, shame on you.
I did comedy across the street from the Scientology Celebrity Center for years. So believe me when I say, I can't say anything more. I've been handed.
Tell you what, I'm gonna bring over a couple of cans on some string, and we're gonna test you for some stress, mm-hmm. and then we'll get to the bottom of this.
All right.
During this big old fight, I thought there was a really cool moment because like the new robot guy, he gets his arm ripped off by Tila, and then like Trapjaw starts to eat the arm in a real weird show off kind of a move. And so they just press the button for the buzzsaw we saw earlier, drives itself right into his forehead. I don't know if it kills him or not, but it did not look good. And then to what Chan was saying to a point, totally, it's a little bit weird because they're fighting. There's a struggle for survival. And then we get this robot guy who, like, when he gets too beat up, he's going to self-destruct. He has to press some buttons. So we get a moment where it happens again. He gets shoved into with the other people. He's going to press the buttons. And then I believe it's Andra throws like a ninja star, driving it, forcing him to explode. And then they're like cutting back, and Tila and Andra are sort of just like giggling and high-fiving as they leave the room. And it was a little tonally weird that they are straight out murdering people and they could not be more excited about it.
And here's the thing, like for all of Heavy Metal's problems, the 1981 animated feature.
Bitties.
There are no problems.
the tone shifts wildly, mm-hmm. but it still makes sense.
Yes.
They do it in such a way that you're like, okay, now we're going into comedy and now we're slipping into, you know, like horror, and it goes back and forth. They're just real clumsy about it in this. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves when a thing doesn't get its tone right. And it just like throws you all around.
I mean, that's fair. That's 100% fair. There have been a lot of movies that I've argued. The original Punisher, not the original, that's Dolph Lundgren. The Punisher movie with Thomas Jane in it, I think suffers from exactly what you're talking about, because it can't figure out if it wants to be a hyper violent, you know, action movie, or does it want to be a silly tongue in cheek, we got John Pinette dancing movie, because they do both interchanged with each other pretty much through the whole movie of silliness mixed. And if you've read the comics that it's based off of, you know, I think they do a much better job of, to what you said, Chan, this is the part that's crazy, but through it, we're going to sort of like keep our essence through it and push through with more action. I don't know. I've been feeling that way about that movie. I had to express it somewhere. So the point is, it's the same goddamn thing as what you're talking about. So I relate to what you're saying.
Also,
name of robotics, automation, and the holy sprocket.
Goddamn hilarious. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that one is especially stupid.
That one slapped. That one slapped. So they, Tila and Andra, they jump down a whole while with their grappling hooks. They drop way, way down to get away from these people who are now going to overwhelm them if they catch up to them. And they end up with a cool little area with these little toxic pits. And as they're running through it, Tila uses her prior knowledge of Snake Mountain, starts like throwing explosives into the pits as they're being chased by these cyborg villagers, essentially. And then these goddamn tentacles. Oh my God, I was terrified. These tentacles start rising up out of the toxic sludge and grabbing all of the villagers, the cyborgs, allowing Tila and Andra to get away. And then they go and deliver the goblet. Do you guys have thoughts on tentacles, Chan?
Yeah, they're fine.
I love them. Put them in vaginas.
God damn it. That's what I'm hoping for. Thank you, Gina. See, when you all say, sometimes I forget who says what, you give me shit like that, what do I have to work with?
Oh, I know what I wanted to say.
Try Havoc and let's slip these cogs of war.
Beautiful.
What?
Once again, cry Havoc and let's slip the cogs of war. Look, I'm here for that. These lines are hitting with me. So they deliver the goblet successfully to Majestra, and she says, yo, you want the real deal? And I'm sort of like, all right, lady, come on. This is like your third mission in a row. Let me do some side missions or some shit before I get back to you. Like, I would never clean out a mission line from somebody in any game I've ever played. My point is, they say yes. Tila wants to say no because she says, well, I want you to steal an artifact from Castle Grayskull. Great. Okay. Fine. Andra says, yo, I am in. This is, I want to be an adventurer. This is the real shit. Finally. And Tila's like, God damn no. But if you're going, sure. So we move on to Castle Grayskull and we run into old ass sorceress.
Yeah. This I dug because it reminded me of the movie, because that's a, you know, the live action Dolph Lundgren again, he's in everything.
Genius.
Movie, because that was a big plot point, is that the sorceress is sort of aging while she's stuck in this thing and she's slowly getting older. And it reminded me of that.
Yeah. And it's taking all of her focus to sort of like keep the magic around and not letting it all slip away. So Majestra, AKA Evil-Lyn, goes on up to her and she's about to like hit her with this thing, it appears. So Teal was like, oh, F no. Throws a thing, a spear, I believe, and then Cringer appears out of nowhere, grabs it out of the air and says, we cannot fight right now. Evil-Lyn turns into Evil-Lyn, the moment we mentioned earlier, where Tila's like, yo, we knew you were Evil-Lyn the whole time, D. Now, why you let her get that close to the sorceress if you knew that? Different problem. And so it turns out sorceress asked Evil-Lyn to go get that stuff in order so that she may take the magic, put it into the goblet, which turns out to be the ram's skull head of Skeletor's Havoc staff. Holy shit. And she ends up putting the magic in there to make it stronger. This is where we get a little bit of exposition, because it turns out everyone here is on the same page. Surprise, surprise. The power sword that He-Man has been wielding is a magical conduit, allowing all magic to come out of the ether and go into Eternia and then let the magic flow in Eternia. It's essentially the tap to the keg that leads us all to drinking. I don't know where my analogy is going. The point is that when it absorbed all that magical power, even though it's the conduit, it broke into two pieces. One went to effective heaven. One went to effective hell. And the real mission now going forward in this show is you got to go get both pieces so we can bring magic back. Teela, who doesn't want to bring magic back, sadly, you're the only one who can do it.
Yeah, so I like Chan, think that there are writing issues with this show, but I did like this one more than the first one. And I'm willing to overlook some rapid tone shifts and as it sort of finds its feet. I will say that this scene had a couple of cool things for me. So I like that it makes it clear that this is Evelyn from the beginning, so that you're left thinking, God, why is Teela so dumb? Yep. Because the actual reveal was that she's in league with the sorceress. That the sorceress asked Evelyn to come here to help her save magic because they are on the same team. So that was the actual fake out, more so than just, you know, the 80s cartoons would have just been, the only fake out would have just been like, surprise, I'm Evelyn this whole time. This yep. was, yeah, we know that. Oh, shit, you're working with the sorceress. So I thought that was a cool sort of updated thing. And I love it when bad guys and good guys team up. And so now there's an all lady, good, bad team up where they're going mm-hmm. to the underworld. And I love a good, I mean, Dante's Inferno is, you know, I loved reading it in high school. I love that these three ladies are going to go into the underworld. So I liked this ending. I liked that there was another fake out. I like that Evelyn is joining the team. I like that it's going to turn into a buddy road trip comedy, and that road is straight to hell.
All of the above. Now, only a monster could think that this female-driven, woman-written episode didn't hit with them. Chan, what were your thoughts?
We have a friend who... does not like which one is this, Rise of Skywalker or Last Jedi? I think it might have been Rise of Skywalker, and
crazy.
His contention is that he is not misogynist. He just has problems with the you know various aspects of the movie and the story and all that jazz. And love the guy, but I always like. In my head, every time I think of somebody who does not like Rise of Skywalker, I'm like, yeah, but you're a misogynist though, right? Because so many people who complain about the movie are then like, yeah, because the girl character just really doesn't do it for me kind of thing. So I feel real bad that every person I've heard say terrible things about Masters Universe Revelation has been like, ah, oh, but the girls are, blah, 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 and that I am somehow on their side. it bothers me a lot.
Sure.
Absolutely not the case that I have a problem with. I love strong women kicking dudes in the teeth. That's one of my very favorite things in the world. But the characters, man, they just feel real flat. And the motivations don't really work, and they just feel like Kevin Smith is writing them, which
I'm all about female characters, just not these ones.
I'm all about Kevin Smith not writing women anymore because he's fucking terrible at it. He has always been terrible at it. I don't like his writing. I have never liked his writing. I was moderately amused by Clerks and by Clerks, the animated series. Literally nothing else he has ever done has ever made me smile. So
I like what about Dogma? His work on the IMDb show written by Gina Ippolito?
No, that's brilliant.
That, nice. That was real good stuff. He took a lot to elevate that dude up. And you know what? Whoever else was working on that, A+ primo work.
Now, I guess he's written a lot of comic books in the meantime, and I've heard he's done a very good job with that. His movies have always been very hit or miss for me. Like I say, I thought Dogma was a lot of fun, even though it got very cheap in some sections. I don't know, The Poop Demon, for example. Not that I don't love A Poop Demon, don't get me wrong. But I will say, anybody who's gone back, even in the last year, try watching Clerks again.
I won't.
It was a couple of years ago, but still. Clerks is one of those movies that you remember being this big thing with this sparked dialogue, and it was inspired and it changed your life. But if you go back and watch Clerks now, you will not feel the same way.
I mean, first of all, that was what, 27 years ago?
Sure.
So
because movies from 30 years ago never hold up. That's what Gina Ippolito just said.
I'm just saying I personally like Kevin Smith. I like him as a person. I've worked with him many times. I think he's really great. I think his relationship with his daughter is great.
You don't need to suck up. After this, he's never gonna hire you again. So I don't know why.
Yeah, the whole things you said about him.
Yeah, it's been really brutal.
Maybe Clerks and or Clerks animated series.
No, he's also a good, he's also a very good sport at making fun of himself.
He seems like
I will say, and I don't hate this show as much as Chan. I think, you know, like I think it's fine. I if we weren't watching it for the podcast, you know, I might get around to watching the rest of the episodes at some point, but I don't have a burning
right after Last of Us.
After I played The Last of Us and Mass Effect, I'll get to it. But yeah, like so far the writing has left a little to be desired. And again, I'll say what I said last time, which is I do feel like the ingredients are there. Like if you said to me like, okay, what if it's Tila, some random chick whose name I forget, and Evelyn pairing up, I refuse to learn new names, right? You know this about me.
And I'm just going to keep shouting it every time you don't remember.
Evelyn, you know, have to basically save Eternia, and they have to do that by taking sort of a Greek mythology style trip to hell. That's cool. That's cool. I do think that, you know, nuance and the things filling in, coloring in the lines a little bit is maybe not this show's strong point.
We're talking about a He-Man show. I mean, just for the record, we're talking about a He-Man show. We are not talking about, you know, the great Greek tragedies of this world. And I think for being what it is, I think it's doing great.
She-Ra was arguably shittier than He-Man, and the remake was so good.
I also think that's a cop-out, too. I think if you're what's essentially an adult animated show on Netflix, like, you have your pick of writers for that writer's room. There are hundreds of writers who would have given their left eye, turned it into some sort of mechanical tentacle monster like that farmer in that one scene to write in there. So I do think it's a cop out to say like, well, for what it is, it's fine. You know, like I'm enjoying it. I'm not enjoying it. I am just pointing out the flaws in the writing. Because again, if someone had come to me and said, hey, here's my pitch for an episode, I could have written the hell out of it, is what I'm saying.
What I hear you saying is fucking hire Gina Ippolito for season 2 of Masters of the Universe Revelation, Kevin Smith. It's not like you haven't worked with her before. I think we all need to take to social media and start a crusade, adding Kevin Smith with everything we possibly can, yelling profanities at him, and also tagging TV's Gina Ippolito, saying hire her to remake your shitty ass show, Kevin. I think we can get all our fans on board for this and get Gina some work. That's how it works in Hollywood. Please, no one do that.
Feel free to use any of the quotes that I have said and replace it. Just cite Gina as the person who said that. And
who can tell the difference between these two on the air at the end of the day?
There's no way.
Yeah. So guys, don't do any of that. Okay, a big reveal at the end was that Man-at-Arms is still around, and he might take part in one of the future episodes. That was our twist.
I wasn't sure why this was a reveal or why they went out on this. He wasn't dead.
Seemed like a weird choice.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is, like, it show, like, you know, it goes out with Teela saying, like, there's a, we're going to need one more man on the team. There's only one man I know who can pull off something like this. And, like, you know, she says there's only one, like, weapons trainer, one, like, weapon. So the second she says it, you know, she's talking about her dad. Like, but then it, like, cuts to her dad.
Who can know how to do this?
Yeah, then it like cuts to her dad and it's like dun dun. And I'm like, is this how they're going to end this episode? And it just like sort of ends on him as if that's the big moment of the episode.
Man at Arms, we haven't seen him in a whole episode.
Yeah, it was very like I would understand if like an entire season had gone by and you just sort of had forgotten about him, but it's a strange way to, and again, it sort of ties into this whole thing where it's like it doesn't feel like episodes of TV. It feels like maybe like someone wrote a movie that like this was their first movie they wrote and they chopped it up, because usually you have to go out on something that's like pretty big. And for a second, I was like, wait, am I missing something? Like, and it's not, he's not even like doing anything. Like, I would get it if they cut to him and he's in some seedy bar and now he's like an alcoholic and has just like fought, but it just looks like he's like a fucking farmer or something.
He's just a guy in a house. And yeah, he turns, like, and he's like, hey, everybody, I'm TV's Man at Arms, a guy in a house.
Yeah. I was like, that's a strange, you know, a strange way to end
weird.
It. He's obviously going to say yes. Like, she's just going to be like, hey, dad, do you want to come on a mission with us? Yeah, all right, okay, cool. There's not like, you know, again, it's not like we don't see him and he's not like missing an arm or something, or he's not like right in the middle of like a pit of vipers. It's just like he's like, well, all right, gotta run some errands now.
I think the reveal is that he's kind of fat, like he put on I'm not really sure, because I also didn't understand.
As somebody who loved the shit out of this piece of television, I have no fucking clue what they were doing with this ending. It was just so unneeded, so bizarre. And I understand they're trying to like, here's where we're going next episode, everybody. Wink, wink. I mean, I guess that's the idea of just like, it's a little teaser for what's about to come. But this is a Netflix show. What's about to come, literally, but if I don't do anything, it's going to start automatically in 7 seconds.
Like, yeah, I turned that shit off. Now I get to watch all the credits and it doesn't play automatically.
Mm. Oh, man, I couldn't live like that.
No, it's great. You like, there's all sorts of shit you miss when they go to the next thing.
Gina, also understand that when I watch a piece of media, I usually have my phone open to IMDb to that listing. So the entire time I'm watching, I'm looking up who everybody is. I don't need credits at this point. And that's our show, everybody. Chan, any more sound? We haven't had a sound drop in a while. Any more disappointing ones you want to throw at us before we get out of here?
There's more than one fortress of yore in this land. What say you to completing the set?
What?
Completing the set.
Hearts? What the fuck is the completing the set?
You got it, the fork and knife and a spoon. You got to complete the set, Chan. What are you talking about?
Nobody said that ever before 2012.
That is a real thing people really say. I bet you could find some very old literature where they talk about a matching set of something.
I will say one more thing. I do like that once the magic, you know, Eternia ball is sliced from the sorceress, she just sort of turns into like a regular old woman. I think it would be a funny sketch, you know, if I still regularly wrote sketches to see like what she's doing. Cause this is the first time in however many hundreds of years that she hasn't had magic. So, like, just her waking up and, like, having to shower and make herself not stinky anymore would probably be something that she, like, doesn't know how to do without magic.
Cringer, give me a cigarette.
Yeah, like, what's she doing for money? Is she, like, how's she getting by? I don't know. She's just, like, and she's going to, like, go out into the work world and realize that no one wants to hire old women. So they're going to be like, well, what does your resume say? And she's like, no, I've been the sorceress for, like, 800 years. And they're like, so you don't have a previous boss that we can talk to? And she's like, well, yep. I technically was my boss. I was all powerful. I just don't have my magic anymore. And it's like, yeah, you know, we were looking for someone at, like, an entry level job, and I don't think that's you.
Sorceress, what do you say are your marketable skills? And don't say magic, because you don't have any.
She
would do very terribly.
Is absolutely selling beadwork and feather necklaces on Etsy.
Oh, like dream catchers.
Yeah,
she's right.
She's
really
right
into dream catchers, I think.
Closets full of that shit that she cannot sell at swap meets near Castle Grayskull.
Yeah, and she's like the type of person that like uses all natural deodorant even though it doesn't work at all. But then like eats like CBD gummies. And when you like point out the fact that she's like using all natural deodorant because she doesn't want chemicals, but CBD is unregulated, she's like, yeah, but it's natural.
It's fair. Natural oils, Gina. Come on.
Yeah. No, you can get you can pick gummies off a bush. There's a gummy bush that has CBD gummies.
And that's our show, everybody. Masters of the Universe Revelation, episode 2, named, what was it? Goblet something? Poison Chalice, ladies. There was no poison. What are we talking about? What a weird title.
That's a
now
good,
that I think about it. I guess the chalice point was poisoned in Triclops' area, but it didn't really poison people. It just made them monster. I don't know. Anyway.
Evil.
That's the episode right there. I loved it. Gina is coming around. Chan, we're going to get you there. I feel that by the end of episode 5, you're going to be way on board for this series, ready to watch it again.
I mean, I said I liked this. Like, I enjoyed it. It's one of those things that, again, if I wasn't watching it for the podcast and I was just watching it, I'd be like, yeah, that was fun. But because we're analyzing it, I can take the time to say, this writing isn't very good.
I came in wanting to like it. I was like, okay, you know what? We're going to like let episode 1 be what it is, because, you know, like for whatever reason, it just didn't quite click. And it's I'm going to look at this whole thing as a piece. But episode 2 does not give me hope that it will improve.
Because they keep putting
like
those darn women in it. Ugh.
You didn't like it any more than the pilot?
More
cohesive.
Yeah, it was definitely more cohesive than the
pilot. There are a lot more things that I liked in it.
Yeah.
But overall, my experience still was not good.
Okay, so if the pilot was someone put a bunch of good ingredients on the counter, but then no one made me a meal, this was someone put a bunch more good ingredients, but then just used like 2 of them to make sort of a broth, and like I ate it, and I was like, okay.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, it's sort of like, well, we're going to swap out the bologna with capicola, and we're going to swap out your American cheese with a nice Gruyere. And then they just took their dirty ass hands and were like, blah, 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 eat this sandwich. And I'm like, oh, that's, I mean, like, there's some better stuff in here, but it's still like, oh, whoa.
Chan was so mad he just threw his piggy bank.
Don't worry about that.
Holy shit. Look. Chan, I've actually eaten at that place before, and it's still delicious. So don't get me wrong. I've been on the East Coast. I've eaten at those places. Pit beef, folks. Don't ever go to a local pit beef place. That's all I'm trying to say. You will feel like you're going to die afterwards. Not the healthiest people or conditions working there.
Good.
This has been
a
PSA from me to you. Chan, you're about to go to New York. Don't go to a local pit beef place, for the love of God.
I will keep that information at hand.
I was taken to one once when I was in Baltimore, and I found out afterwards that this was like, what do you hazing? That's the people that know better take the newer recruits, which I was, to this horribly unsanitary pit beef place just to see what happens. I enjoyed my sandwich. Didn't worry about the guy with 4 band-aids on his hand.
Ew.
Using that same hand to scoop it right off the scale and into my sandwich.
Oh, I hate everything about this.
Good old days. Those were the good old days. My point is, that's the end of this episode. So let's talk about social media. I'm in a mood now. This show gets me giddy. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm grossed out now.
I'm remembering good old times that were horrifying. So you can check us out on social media. You can go to facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast, patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Hey, at some point we're going to do another live show. We've got Robot Assassin, book 4 of the Find Your Fate series, written by H. William Stein and Megan Stein. Neither of those people is R.L. Stein, who I assume they are related. Don't know how. Don't really care to look it up. But we have Robot Assassin, book 4, coming up next. We have not set a date yet, but that will happen hopefully in the near as opposed to the far. You can also check us out, patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Did I already say that? Don't care. I'll say it again. You can go there. You can become a patron for just a few dollars. You can get access to every episode of this show we've ever made. Those will all be in the super secret vault. Not all of them appear on the feed, of course, which is mostly G.I. Joe and then more recent stuff. And you can be a part of our audience and watch the show live with us and be interacting with us and be part of the show if you'd like to do that for the Find Your Fate going forward. Otherwise, on Twitter, you can find us at G.I. Joe Podcast. But individually, I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And that has been our episode. Chan, do you have any more puns in the chamber to take us out today?
That's not a show. This is a show. Crikey.
God. Good night, everybody.
Gina.
Pip, pip, cheerio.
Oh, fuck.
Only 4 others share this secret. Guardians of Grayskull all. Amidst an army of the honorable. Committed to guarding Castle Grayskull from the havoc of destruction. For those who control Grayskull control the power to be masters of the universe.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy, you gotta sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.